Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's talk about movies. This is Kenny for my brain. If you wanna talk movies, well, guess what? We on the same thing. You gotta watch this podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to You Have to Watch This Podcast.
I'm Alan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Devin.
I was fully expecting you to say your name during the
interview. Yeah. No, it's Alan, Ryan, and Devin, and it freaks me out when it's not, to the point where if it's just Ryan and I, we have to go, I'm Devin, I'm Ryan, and I'm Devin, just to make me feel like it's okay.
That's great. good job. I will take it from here. Today, we are going to be talking about Devin's pick, the 2001 film Moulin Rouge, because Ewan McGregor, if we didn't talk about him enough last week, we're going to talk about him some more this week. But before we get to that, we've got some business to take care of. First of all, I want to thank everyone who came out to Main Street Comic Con in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania this past weekend. We gave away a lot of stuff, and I'm glad we were able to give a lot of it away because I wanted to give it away, and I'm glad it went over well. We met some very cool people. It was a lot of fun. Ryan, how did you like your first con experience as an exhibitor?
It was fun. Definitely a different side of things, being there as everyone's setting up, talking to, you know, the participants to the left and, well, for us, to the right of us and behind us.
Yeah.
Which was fun. So.
Did you guys have anyone cool next to you? Like, who was around you?
I want to get their name right, so give me a second. Panda Designs was next to us, and there are the artists who I bought something from last year for Ryan, his Wharf of Wall Street
right here,
poster.
Actually. He does custom matchups of different, what's it called? I guess fandoms or IPs. Just different show IPs. There we go.
Yeah.
And then he also does some goofy stuff, not just crossovers, but plays on words. Being a dyslexic, I absolutely love this.
I really like that.
Yeah, we're going to have George on the show in the future to talk about his graphic novel, Fat Man. So that's going to be exciting. So stay tuned for that. We met some other cool people at the con that we're going to be doing some collabs with here in the future. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we can't wait until our next convention. I feel like at some point we're going to have to travel to London and do a convention there.
You'll have to. Guys, come on. We have conventions here. I don't know. I'm slowly learning British words for things. For example, I learned today that flea market is actually a car boot sale. So maybe conventions are called something else and something silly here. Who knows?
Car boot sale. A flea market's called a car boot. I mean, it makes sense because the stuff comes from the boot or the trunk of the car.
Well,
so that makes sense.
Traditionally, they'll just back their cars up, open the trunk or open the boot, and that's where you just buy from their boot. Which
basically a bunch of shady high schoolers selling stuff in the parking lot.
I can't wait to go, Ryan. I'm counting the hours.
Let's move on to our first segment of the show. Each week we talk about things that we've just watched in the past week that we want to talk about, that we're excited about. Devin, you've been gone for 2 weeks. What have you been watching?
I've been watching the latest season of Umbrella Academy.
Me too.
Have you? Okay, did you finish it?
I did not finish it. I am only 3 episodes in. I've been
same here.
compared to Stranger Things, we're pacing ourselves. Because Stranger Things doesn't come out until Friday, so we have to have something to fill in that gap. So
the void in our lives. How are you guys liking it so far?
Just going off of the first 3 episodes, I'm sad that every episode doesn't open with a Footloose dance number.
Okay, good. Me too.
So Umbrella Academy for me is one of those shows that I enjoy, but as soon as it's over, I forget everything about it. And then I was getting into this new season. They do the introduction of the Sparrow Academy. And then we're back with the Umbrella Academy. I was like, why did I like this show again? Like I had trouble getting back into it. And then the dance number happened. I was like, oh yeah, this is that show. Like, and I was immediately back on board. I was like, let's do this. Like, I am all in for Umbrella Academy.
Have you guys gotten to the episode that contains House of the Rising Sun?
No.
No.
Be on the lookout for House of the Rising Sun, because there's an episode that begins and ends with it. It begins with the standard cover of House of the Rising Sun. And my favoritest part of it is it ends with House of the Rising Sun, Jeremy Renner's cover, which is a weird, weird version of the song.
Wait, Jeremy Renner from Jeremy Renner, the app? Jeremy Renner?
Wait, there's an app?
He had his own app at one point.
What did it do?
It just gave you like different clips and like insights into his life. It was like his own little social media thing without being social media. Yeah.
Maybe that was like the notification song on the app or something. That would have been cool.
Maybe.
Gross.
No, that's cool. But no, Ryan, what have you thought of this season so far?
I don't know yet.
Yeah.
Okay. To be honest. Because the last thing. Yeah. I like parts of it. I'm not entirely all up on the Footloose thing as you two guys are. Apparently. I mean, it was fine. I mean, I kind of like the mannequin little hallucination better.
Yeah.
That whole sequence was great.
Oh, yeah. No. The whole sequence as a whole was good. It's just I need to see the rest of it before.
That's fair.
Because, I mean, this was a show that Kristen really liked. This is one of the few superhero shows that she actually likes watching. Unfortunately, at the third episode, though, and what she's into and like what she likes in shows, I totally get why she had this reaction. She's letting me watch the rest of the series before she probably picks it back up again.
Sure. If it makes you feel better for the first, I'd say three episodes, maybe four, I would watch one a day. I would watch it and go, okay, good. I'm satisfied. I've seen Umbrella Academy. I don't need to keep watching. Only recently have I now been like, no, I really want to see what happens next. Let's just watch the next episode. And that's only been for the last, I think, four. I'm on episode seven now.
Okay.
So
you haven't finished it either.
I haven't, no, but what I've seen is really good. And it makes me realize how much I just like the characters, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a quick thing that I noticed in the first three episodes, I really like Luther this season. Like, I don't know why, but like, I don't know what they changed about his character, but I really like Luther this season. I don't know if he's just concussed or what, but
no, I think that's what it is, because he's over trying to be the leader at this point and he's just being himself and he's better that way. But my favorite, and I can't remember the names right now, but well, I mean, Diego is my favorite character the whole show so far, but my second, the other two characters I'm invested in is the hippie. I forget his name.
Klaus
and Klaus and Victor.
Yeah,
I really I'm really happy with how they did the transition for Me Victor
too. Yeah, it was absolute, it was perfect. I don't, they could not have done that better.
Yeah, no. And I, but in episode three, there's a moment where Luther doesn't know about it. And he's like, what else did I miss? Like, so I'm glad they're able to like make not make fun of it, but make use it for humorous reasons, like with character reactions, but still be respectful with the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch it, watch the rest of it. So I've got a few days until Stranger Things Volume 2 comes out. So.
I keep forgetting that's on Friday. That's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
All right. Ryan, how about you? What have you watched?
I don't talk about Beavis and Butthead a lot, but Beavis and Butthead was like that show when it was first on that I would sneak to like watch behind my parents' back because I thought it was the funniest thing. It's bathroom humor. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, it's just, it's, I'm going to turn off my brain and watch something funny. That's what Beavis and Butthead is for me. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite go-to like stupid movies is their first movie, Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Yep.
And they finally came out with Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe.
Oh my God.
It's not as good as Do America, but it is still classic Beavis and Butthead. So it's still good for fans out there. They do time travel. They do dimensions. They there are alternate dimensions in this. There's time travel done in this. Has to do with the CIA and NASA.
Okay.
It's entertaining.
Uh-huh.
And it's worth and watching, and I really want to do it for the show. Unless okay. you guys want to run off and watch
no, I'll
it
do,
now.
No, I'll do it.
I've never seen Beavis and Butthead Do America.
That's a shame. That's a very good Beavis and Butthead movie.
The show that I had to sneak around my parents to watch was The Simpsons. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I've watched The Simpsons a lot.
Yeah.
So how much of the multiverse and time traveling stuff in this was just a ripoff of Rick and Morty? Because looking at the poster for this, it looks like a ripoff of Rick and Morty.
It's honestly not.
Okay. Is it at all? Can you see the influence of that in this at all?
No.
Like Mike Judge being just like, I'm going to get some of that Rick and Morty money. Blah, 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 blah.
No.
Okay. No, that's fine.
Mike. Yeah. I mean, it's how everything happens is like the first part of this movie prior to them doing the whole time travel thing is just a classic Beavis and Butthead episode. That is it. Like the first 20, 25 minutes, it could just be an episode from like 1994.
Good.
And that's why I love this so much. And then after that, it's a full blown movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just craziness after craziness happens afterwards. But yeah. And then it's a Beavis and Butthead movie. So the movie ends and they're on their couch watching TV. So, you know, it's a perfect Beavis and Butthead storyline.
Okay.
I almost never think about Beavis and Butthead ever yeah. until it's like presented in front of me like this. I may have to watch it. If you're going to do it for the podcast, then I'm going to hold off on watching it specifically to do this for the podcast. Cause yeah, I now remember having memories of Beavis and Butthead growing up. And I guess I do need to watch this movie now.
Well, I think what I'm going to do is do what I have been doing with for stuff. So I'm first going to do America first. So Alan can catch up on it a little bit.
Sure. I mean, you could always do a double feature with the animated thing.
That's fine.
I feel like a lot of the things that we'll talk about will carry over with this into both films. Cause I don't have much familiarity with Beavis and Butthead at all.
Okay.
Except for 2 weeks ago when it was just you and me on the show. Hey-o.
See what you did there.
So yeah, I would say do a double feature and yeah.
I would be happy with that.
Because remember, that's always an option, guys.
It is.
That's going to be happening sooner rather than later. So okay. Because
it's a good summer movie. It just is.
Oh, it's great.
Okay. I haven't really, we talked about what I've been watching, which is Umbrella Academy.
Yeah.
But I need to be honest with you guys. I almost canceled today's show just
Why?
So I could be in front of my TV right now watching the new season of Only Murders in the Building.
The gun. I know I haven't watched it yet.
There are two episodes out right now that I am absolutely watching right after we finish this. I cannot wait for this. I've been waiting like this is like of all the things that have come out this summer, this is the one I've surprisingly been most excited for. Like I've avoided everything about it. I cannot wait to watch more of this show because it is one of my favorite new shows on television from last season. So
how fast was the turnaround for this show? I feel like we just ended the season like last winter. Is that right?
I feel like, well, they were in production during COVID, so I feel like they had some time in between production. So the finale was in October, and then they started of 2021. Yeah. So it was pretty fast, but immediately after the show wrapped, like they went back into production.
Oh,
right.
Wow. After,
right. Like, so they started filming again in November. So for a television show, that's not crazy.
Okay.
Because it's not like they're adding lightsabers and Darth Vader's breathing effects or anything. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen the new season. I don't know what happens to Martin Short, but
it could take a weird turn.
It could. I mean,
to be fair, some of the editing that they did in season one was really, really good and really creative. So I'm really excited to see where they go with the season.
Yeah. So there's going to be a point this summer where I'm going to have, like, I'm still going to have shows to watch every day of the week, because I'll have this. I'll have Better Call Saul.
Right.
Westworld just came back, which I guess I could have talked about, but I have nothing really to say. It's another one of those shows that I just forget about once it's over and then I get back into it. But they time jumped 7 years. So.
Oh, but aren't they robots? So it doesn't matter.
I don't even know who's robots on that show anymore. All I do know is I know people who worked on that show this year. So I'm excited to see some of the stuff that they did. But yeah, that's what I'm doing tonight. So if we could speed this along, guys, it's I've got
plans. Moulin Rouge is weird. Great. Bye, guys.
Well, I think that does it for our We Watch the segment. Let's get right into it. And talk about today's main topic, the 2001 Baz Luhrmann film, Moulin Rouge. Now, before we get into the topic, let's talk about why we picked this one for this time. Because last weekend, Elvis premiered in theaters, directed by Baz Luhrmann, who directed this. And we talked about Obi-Wan Kenobi ending last week. This is supposed to be last week's episode, but Devin couldn't make it, so we pushed it back a week. Before we get too deep into Moulin Rouge,
yeah,
what do you guys think of what you've seen of Elvis? None of us have seen it in theaters, but what are your impressions from any trailers or anything that you've seen?
I'm really excited to see it. I really am. They have a band that won Eurovision last year, Måneskin, doing a song for it, and I'm very excited to see it, mostly to see Måneskin. Yeah, that's what I'm excited about.
Okay.
But it looks cool. It doesn't look as Baz Luhrmann-y as it could look, but it looks cool.
Part of me wonders if that's just the marketing, though.
Could be.
Brian, how about you?
It looks good.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, when it comes to, I guess, this recent trend of music biopics, I think it's going to be on the top end.
I mean, it was able
what I've seen so far.
It was able to knock Tom Cruise out of the number one spot at the box office.
Did it?
Yeah.
Just barely.
Oh.
But then again, there's also a lot of original hardcore Elvis fans still alive. So, I mean,
yeah.
There's also that too.
In response, Tom Cruise released a statement saying he's all shook up.
Oh, I hate it. Oh. Are you both Elvis fans? Would you both watch Elvis on the merits of it being Elvis?
I wouldn't say I'm an Elvis fan. I'm more of a biopic fan.
Okay.
Yeah, I like I didn't really know anything about Johnny Cash before I watched Walk the Line. So.
And it probably didn't inhibit you from liking that movie, did it?
No.
No. Brian, do you like Elvis at all? Did he make your rotation among your pop, your like punk music as a kid?
I don't own anything Elvis.
Fair enough.
I do.
I will not turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
I will not turn it off. If I like have the radio on and an Elvis song comes on, I will not turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
If someone's playing Elvis, I will not ask for it to be turned off. But I do not seek Elvis myself.
The only Elvis I own, and I'm pretty sure it's on there, is the Ocean's 11 soundtrack with a little less conversation. I'm pretty sure
and that's not even the original, the remix.
Yeah, the remix. Yeah. The I think it's DJ Junkie XL, I think.
That's it. That's exactly it.
I have that on vinyl. That's the only Elvis I own. Yeah.
It's fair. It's where you. That's where I'm at. I had an aunt who firmly believed that he was alive and kicking and would attend every Elvis impersonator she could because she knew one of these days it'd be the real one.
Well, I said to somebody at the convention this weekend, who's like, yeah, I'm going to Vegas to get married by Elvis. I was like, no, you're not. They just put a whole kibosh on the whole Elvis impersonator wedding thing.
Wait, like, did they really?
Yeah, you cannot get married by an Elvis impersonator in Vegas anymore.
Is it because of this movie? Why? What happened?
I'm guessing part of it has to do with this movie, but the other part of it is just the estate was like, yeah, the wedding thing is a no-go. Like, they have to be performing to be an actual Elvis impersonator. Otherwise, they owe us money.
This is a bridge too far.
Yeah.
Fair.
Anyway.
It's a shame. I didn't know that.
Anyway, Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge. Right. So here we go. So Moulin Rouge, 2001 movie. Written and directed by Baz Luhrmann, stars Nicole Kidman, Ewan McGregor, John Leguizamo. Also stars Jim Broadbent in arguably his best role ever, but also Ozzy Osbourne, isn't it? This movie is something that has been a major part of my life for a while. We listened to this soundtrack in the car as a family driving to and from school. I'm one of the few people that probably only knows 90% of the words to Lady Marmalade, which doesn't make me incredibly proud, but whatever.
Put a pin in this. Go.
Like,
I want to hear it now. No, go. I want to hear it now.
She met Marmalade down in Old Moulin Rouge, strutting her stuff on the street. He said, hello. Hey, Joe. Got to give it a go. Hey, sister. Soul sister. Got to get that flow, sister.
Okay.
It goes on from there.
I'm not going to torture you anymore, but that was... That was something
magical. So yeah, I have seen this movie when it first came out. My dad was absolutely obsessed with it, so it was a pretty much staple in our household. Watching it as an adult and showing it to people as an adult, I feel like it's the Olive of movies, where there are people who will watch it. Everyone who watches it will have an opinion. Some of those will love it. Some of those will hate it. It just comes with the territory. The movie is paced incredibly, incredibly crazily. And is notorious for its quick edits and cuts, but it's a movie that I've kind of grown up with, and I kind of know what I'm getting into when I get into it. Ryan, you've seen this movie before.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me everything.
Well, I want to say that I saw this in theaters, that I was dragged to the theaters to see this movie, but I do not remember, but it probably did happen. Mm-hmm. But we had it on VHS. We had it on DVD. I liked the music from it when I was younger, so I owned the soundtrack to it.
Yeah.
It was on rotation at the house.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really watched it that much recently. It's been a while since I've actually seen it, which I'll get into some of the things I noticed this time watching it compared to when I was younger. But yeah, no, I'm one of those people that really liked it when I first saw it.
Great. So now for the big one, Alan, this is your first time seeing it, correct?
Yes.
You've never seen this movie before.
Correct.
What did you think?
Okay. So before I get into that, I need to tell you a story.
Okay.
I had to rent this to watch it. So I asked my wife, hey, I'm renting this movie. Do you want to watch it with me? She's like, no, I don't like that movie. It's like, oh, you've seen it. She's like, I stopped watching it partway through. She couldn't finish it. Mm-hmm. And I started watching the movie, and immediately I knew where she turned it off. And I said to her, I paused it. I was like, I know exactly where you turned this off. It was either here or here. And it was like within like a 10-second gap. And mm-hmm. she's like, yeah, that sounds about right. That's probably where I turned it off. I did not turn it off. I kept watching it. And I told you guys I did something that I haven't done for this show before. I watched mm-hmm. this movie twice since... Not only that, I've listened to the soundtrack like the whole way through, top to bottom, in the last 48 hours.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it.
You hated it.
Yeah, it sucked. No, I really enjoyed it. There's a lot to talk about with this.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of editing choices to talk about. There's casting choices that are questionable, especially by today's standards. But, and there's some Star Wars trivia to talk about too. So, Yeah, I enjoyed it. I kind of want to go see it on Broadway now.
Also, Ryan, we're going to have to talk about that because I know that on that someone in your household has seen it on Broadway, and I
my wife went to go see it. Yes,
yes. I didn't want to out your wife for having seen it, but I do want to talk about what she had experienced during it. But let's talk about film first. So one of the things that becomes most obvious fastest about this movie is its insane frenetic pace. It's kind of weird, almost like not quite made for humans editing. Within the first, 5 minutes of the movie, you get Ewan McGregor inventing the soundtrack to The Sound of Music. And then you end up getting Slughorn from Harry Potter shouting "Can Can" at you over top of an army of people singing "Smells Like Teen Spirit." So it's that kind of movie. Do you guys like that? Were the edits like fun for you? Were they too much? Did it ever make you uncomfortable? Because I've heard the whole gamut.
You know, on paper, everything you just said sounds terrible.
Right.
But somehow it works. Mm-hmm. It is like my first note here is very chaotic, and I am not high enough for this opening.
Kinda.
So it does a lot. Like it is so chaotic, and it's not just the editing choices that they make; it's the filming techniques that they're using, because they do kind of like a pop-up book type thing. Like it's layers upon layers, and the camera goes through everything, and everything's morphing and changing sizes. And it for 2001, it looks really good still. Mm-hmm. Because it's not really CGI. It is CGI, but it's not super. It doesn't rely on the computer graphics as much as just the way it's surrealism. Mm-hmm. And then it messes with frame rates a lot, which is why you get a lot of the slow motion and like choppiness of some of the scenes. Technically wise speaking, mm-hmm. there's a lot going on here for the edit on the editing side of things.
Yeah, Ryan, did you have a problem with the editing and the pace of it? No.
The editing fixed the music.
Mm-hmm.
The editing fits the music, and it goes hand in hand. If you didn't have the song selection with the tempo that it had, then the editing to me would get in the way.
Yeah.
But everything meshes together. And to be honest, like this was my introduction. Like, see, this came out in 2001. Yeah. So I was like 15, 16 years old. And this was my like introduction to be like, oh, I like musicals. Okay. Yeah. You know, like that's how that went for me. Was you know, this movie. But just like now I forget which one of you said it, where like in the first 5 minutes you have, you know, all of these different things going on to where you get to in a Slughorn yelling in your face to do the can-can. And one thing I noticed watching it this time, I feel like my perception of the edits was slower when I was younger compared to now, because I was watching that whole sequence and everything that I thought I was like, every single edit I felt like when I was younger compared to now was like a half second longer.
Oh, really?
It was really weird. Like when I was a teenager, I remember being able to watch this and being like, and like not thinking it was going too quickly and being able to like take in the scenery of everything. Mm-hmm. Watching it this time, everything was going by so quickly.
So part of me wonders, and it's been a while since I've watched anything at your house, Ryan. Part of me wonders if that has to do with the refresh rate on your TV.
Oh. Because I was going to just say, what if we're getting old?
I just chopped it up to an age thing.
Yeah.
It might be an age thing. It might be a technical thing. It might be something like, did you stream this or did you have it on DVD?
No. DVD.
DVD.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is one of Kristen's favorite movies. Yeah. So we have it on DVD. Mm-hmm. In fact, I told her about it. I watched it last night and I told her like, oh, we're watching you know, we're watching Moulin Rouge for the show. Just want to watch with me. And she just stopped what she was doing. She looked at me and she goes, "You're doing Moulin Rouge? Why didn't you tell me? We could have watched this like over the weekend." I was like, I told her, I was like, "I thought I did tell you." And she's like, "Well, put it on." I was like, "Okay.
Do it now. What are you waiting for?"
Yeah, that's pretty much how it was.
So I guess at some point we're going to have to talk about the music. I mean, the music, because it's a musical. So we'll have to talk about the music.
Yeah.
My guess is that you all like the music. Alan, were you expecting this to be essentially jukebox musical / mashup musical? Did you know that?
I knew it was to an extent. And I know it's not all jukebox stuff.
No.
I knew it was some of it was a jukebox because I had seen clips of Ewan McGregor singing your song and the Sound of Music. I did not expect some of the songs that are in this to be in it. I straight up forgot Lady Marmalade was from this for a second. I was like, "Oh yeah, that's why that song was a thing."
Yeah.
I did not expect Nirvana. I did not. There's a lot of things in here that I didn't expect musically. But speaking of music, I can tell you the two moments that made my wife turn this movie off.
Were they music related?
They were music related.
Tell me.
The first was Nirvana. Because
so she didn't get far.
She did not get far at all. Second, it gets even. It's not even that much further. Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
Oh yeah, that was the same sequence.
Yeah, same sequence. Now my question for you guys is: have you seen Gentlemen Prefer Blondes?
Never.
Okay.
Have you, Ryan?
I want to say I've never heard of that before, but it sounds familiar.
It's Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no.
Okay, so that'll be on my list whenever that Marilyn Monroe with Ana de Armas comes out. That'll be my pick.
It's a Marilyn movie. Okay.
Yeah. We'll have to, because I genuinely haven't seen anything Marilyn Monroe ever.
Yeah. So we will definitely be doing that in the near future. That movie's called Blonde, and it releases... Why can't they just put the release date at the top of the IMDb page?
It's got to be at the bottom.
September 23rd. It is at the top. I just didn't see it. So we'll be doing that in September.
Perfect.
But other than that, there are some music moments that caught me off guard.
Okay.
One of my favorite songs is in this. And I didn't know it was in it. So it caught me completely off guard. And that's David Bowie's Heroes.
Yes.
This movie just made me go to work today listening to every version of Heroes that I could find on Apple Music. That completely caught me off guard. And from that point on, I was like, I don't care how crazy this is. I'm in. So that was the craziest. That was the one thing I did not know is like just the level of melodies that were in here with all these pop hits.
Ryan, how do you think that it aged as far as, because I know that you knew it's a pop musical or a kind of jukeboxy musical. That's not new for you, but did any of the songs, like, because you said you listened to the soundtrack when you were younger, did any of them like become more of your favorite now? Did they change over time? Or is it kind of like, I've always liked this song and it's my favorite?
I take it as a whole.
Yeah.
My favorite song in this is not a mashup. Or like, you know, like it's the one Elton John song.
Your song.
Like that's one of my favorite songs ever. Mm-hmm. And for it to be in this as a whole, pretty much makes me happy. So I'd probably say like, that's probably my favorite out of all of this. Then I would have to say Roxanne.
Yeah. Oh, that song slaps.
And then everything else is just in third place, but it's all pretty much even. I mean, I kind of take this movie as one giant song.
Okay.
Pretty much how I look at it.
Can we talk about Roxanne for a second?
Yes, please.
Devin, how much of Community have you gotten through?
3 seasons.
Have you seen the Chaos Theory episode with the
I must game? Not have.
Redeemial Chaos Theory, I think is what it's called, where they roll the dice in each time. It's the Darkest Timeline episode.
Oh, then no, I haven't seen that one yet.
Okay. Ryan and I were having this conversation this weekend. Roxanne plays a part in that whole episode. Like so the whole premise of the episode is they roll the dice to see who goes down to get the pizza, and then each outcome of the dice is a different universe, and you get to see each one of these. And at the beginning of it, Roxanne starts playing, and Jeff says to Britta, "No, like stop singing," like, and so that plays out through that whole episode, and that's all I could think of when I was watching this, and they started doing Roxanne.
Then no, I definitely didn't make it to season 3 because it's only 4 episodes in, so I must have just finished 2.
Highly but recommend.
I now need to watch that. Yeah, because I like that song. I love the song in this movie. I love how they use Roxanne there. Yeah. Also, all day, annoyingly, I have been singing the lyrics to The Pitch, which is just the stupidest thing for me to be singing, but I love it.
Sing it for us.
Just a spectacular. No words in the vernacular can describe this great event. You'll be done with wonderment. Just all of that. I've just been doing that to my dog, just cooking, doing this. Oh, it's so, and that's all I know from it, by the way. I don't know the whole thing.
It baffles me that that's not on the original soundtrack for this. It's on the second volume of the soundtrack.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so fun.
Just put it all at once. I guess CDs had a limited space back then, and you couldn't just drop an album on iTunes.
That makes sense.
Whatever.
you're also talking 2001, so you're looking at the limit, depending on song length, to be 20, maybe 22, 24 songs if it's, condensed. But yeah. I think there was only 14 or 15 songs on the original album.
Yeah.
I didn't look that up before the show, but yeah.
I just hope you have that memorized. I hope that's true.
I mean, Alan's 15. Right. That it's was 15. Not on the
15. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Alan was right. That song is not on the original soundtrack. Because because now that I'm thinking back to it, it was all of the you put it on at a party. It's all music you can kind of, be upbeat to. It's none of the actual what I would consider classical musical type music, where it's the actors, it's singing and then a line and then singing and then another line. None of that made it to the first album.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I get it. I understand why that was a thing, but I think I like that song too much for me to be okay with them excluding it. I would dance to that at a party is what I'm saying.
Noted.
Perfect. My next
playlist.
So what did you guys think of the overall plot of it? Because what happens with me every time I watch this movie is I'll watch the beginning of it. I'll go, it's all right. And then once the play starts taking shape, once the drama kind of really kicks in, that's when I stop and watch. And I'm like, yes, this is why I like this movie.
I mean, having seen some other Baz Luhrmann stuff, Romeo and Juliet, or Romeo plus Juliet, I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
it seems and knowing what other films he's done, it seems like he has an obsession with star-crossed lovers. Cause you got Romeo and Juliet. You've got this, The Great Gatsby. And I can only assume Elvis is about his love, Elvis Presley and his love of peanut butter and bacon sandwiches, and that, and how that worked out for him. But the story is pretty straightforward, I think, if you look at it from a love story, perspective. Guy meets girl, guy falls in love with girl, guy loses girl, guy throws money at her on stage and calls her a whore in front of all of Paris, and she dies.
That part gets me every time. I don't hate Ewan McGregor. He is my special little boy. I hate him every time he does that. And I know it's coming every time, but then he's like, I've paid for my whore. I'm like, you stop. I get really actually mad at him.
But at the same time, you're seeing a whole nother side of the story that he's completely unaware of. He doesn't know that she is lying to protect him. He doesn't know that she's dying. He's completely in the dark on a whole bunch of stuff. And it makes that, watching it, it makes that scene hard to watch. It is cringy, but it's but also I feel for the guy because that's what he thinks is going on.
Well, it makes it tragic in that way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not necessarily like I'm mad at him because he's dumb, but I know where he's coming from. But like, it's tragic because she tries.
I think that's the other thing that Baz Luhrmann is attracted to is tragedies, because Romeo plus Juliet, this, The Great Gatsby. I don't think Elvis has a happy ending. Thanks to that peanut butter bacon sandwich. like, it's a tragic love story. And I think that if you look at his filmography, there's a lot of that going on there. Spoilers.
That's interesting. I never saw that.
Spoilers for The Great Gatsby.
I mean, I never really thought of it that way, but I think you're right. I really do.
Yeah. Brian, you good?
Yeah, sorry. Okay. I had a thought and I was researching something real
quick. Oh, well, tell me. What's up?
Okay, so one of the things that Kristen and I were talking about after we watched the movie, because I didn't know if this was based off a book or if it was a musical and it was turned into a movie or what, how all of that went. But it was a book first. And it was something that I remember my dad telling me about, and it fits the narrative of the storyline being set in Paris in, like, at the turn of the, 20th century, whatever, 1900. Mm-hmm. And a lot of French stories that were written during, like, around the French Revolution and prior almost always had bad endings as far as we'd be concerned. Uh-huh. You would have the lovers would never have their end, you know, would never have a happy ending. The person who you know, you were rooting for to change things would never end things and was often killed off. Mm-hmm. So there was a book, and I couldn't find the name of the original book, where this narrative plays out, and it's very close to what this movie is. But there was an actual book called The Moulin Rouge that was published in 1950. So
I can help you, Ryan. So the book that you're talking about is called La Vie de Bohème. It is Scenes of Bohemian Life. It is it ended up being a 1992 movie, but it was originally, the book was published in 1851.
Okay.
This connection I knew about before I watched Moulin Rouge. And I almost don't love bringing it up because there is one other musical that is also based on this play. This book that I hate with a fiery passion. Alan, I bet you know what it is. What do you think it is?
Is it by Tick, Tick, Boom's Jonathan Larson?
It is by Tick, Tick, Boom's Jonathan Larson. Rent is also based on this book. So both took the same starting point. One of them went a great direction. One of them was Rent.
Okay, so there are issues with Rent. I will give you that. There are issues with Rent the film. I will give you that.
Yes.
I feel like the stage adaptation in 1996 wasn't as bad as you make it out to be.
Rent is Hamilton, essentially. Yeah. It, for its time, it was very revolutionary. It had its problems, but it's the first time that those types of things have been put in front of an audience in that capacity. It was great. It was revolutionary. I now have the great fortune of being in 2022, looking back at it and going, you could have done more. And the same way that Hamilton has gotten crap as well. I get it. I totally do. I just, you know, it's like Kiss from a Rose. I'll just die on this hill.
Another thing that I own on vinyl.
Disgusting. You know,
disgusting. It's funny that you bring up Kiss from a Rose because Nicole Kidman is in Batman Forever. And it's in this, and you know, I've got a visual aid. Costume's not much different.
No. Oh my gosh! Hold on. So while we're talking about Nicole Kidman, there is a fun fact about this movie with Nicole Kidman. I don't know how much about the production you guys know about this movie. This is infamous with this movie. So filming was halted for 2 weeks in 1999 when this happened, because Nicole Kidman fractured two ribs and injured her knee during a dance routine for this movie. Most of her shots were only of her from the chest up because she was literally filming in a wheelchair, which is bananas for me. this also caused her to miss out on another another movie, and I forget what it was, but she was set up for another movie and couldn't be in it because she injured herself in this movie, which makes me feel incredibly bad.
I want to know what that movie was now.
Let me see. Let me find it quick.
I kind of want to go back and rewatch it and see if I can figure out when she's in a wheelchair and when she's not.
It's every time you see basically just chest up on her is essentially every time it's chest up, she's in a wheelchair. And then every time she's not, we were able to get like the full body shot of her. But like, it's almost consistently that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then also another fun fact, while this movie was filming, it had to move sound stages in the middle of filming because it because of the 2 weeks that it got pushed back, ran into production on another movie. Do we have any guesses what that movie is? It's related. I promise there's a common actor. It's okay. Not that hard to guess.
Oh, there's a common actor? Attack of the Clones?
It was Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
They were filming in the same sound stage. This one had to get pushed. And then they did reshoots while Ewan McGregor was filming Attack of the Clones, which I absolutely love.
I hate
his beard was fake.
Whose beard?
Wait, what?
Ewan McGregor's beard was fake then.
No, oh, it was. Yeah.
Wait, what?
I thought it was.
No.
No. If Ewan McGregor is shooting Moulin Rouge and shooting Clone Wars at the same time, mm-hmm. or at Attack of the Clones, his beard in episode 2 is fake.
If I was Ewan McGregor's agent, this is what I would do. I would make sure that there is a stipulation that he gets a break in between production to go to rest up between pictures and grow mm-hmm. grow the beard.
Depending on how fast he grows facial hair, that could be a while.
But they could have. I need to look at Obi-Wan and. I will give it to you that they have he has a wig on because that mullet's not working for Obi-Wan. And spoilers for Obi-Wan Kenobi, it doesn't work in the flashbacks either.
So no, Ewan McGregor grew a real beard to film Attack of the Clones, but he did not have a beard when he returned to film the pickup scenes and shots. His beard was CG'd in for the pickup scenes and shots.
Okay. They CGI'd on a beard?
I can't. Why not? You know what? And it wasn't as noticeable as Superman's was, or Superman's lack of mustache was.
George Lucas, man.
Yeah, that's the power of Lucas.
Okay. Well, I think removing a beard and adding a beard are two different things.
I think you're 100% right, though.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. What were you going to say, Ryan?
So, the Green Fairy.
Yes.
I recognized her immediately.
I didn't recognize her at all. Who is she?
Kylie Minogue.
I wanted to get back on topic.
What is Kylie? Who is Kylie Minogue?
Okay, you know,
living in Britain and you don't know who that is?
No, I'm the worst Brit.
Okay, you've watched Doctor Who, right?
Yes.
The Titanic episode with David Tennant?
Oh, that was her?
That's her. She's also she's also the artist who's saying Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Yeah, that. Do you know who the voice of the Scream was for the Green Fairy?
Ozzy Osbourne. I also have IMDb up in front of me.
That's all I know. That was the fact. We nailed it, guys.
Okay. So I feel like at this point I have to start talking about Kristen's experience at the actual Broadway show.
Please. I'm curious. Please,
okay. So yeah. I'll start with the absence scene.
Okay. Yeah.
Green Fairy.
Yeah.
So that scene. So in the movie, can, and then the movie starts.
Okay.
Did I like tweak out there?
You did,
for a second?
Yeah. You absolutely did. And it was a perfect time for it.
But we're with you. Keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. So, instead of happening on Broadway, instead of them doing the Green Fairy before going to the Moulin Rouge, it happens after.
Okay.
After the elephant when like everything works and, you know, he's on as the writer. The party at the end is basically him and his friends, his new friends, drinking. Mm-hmm. The Green Fairy is Satine.
Oh.
In the movie, the Green Fairy is just the Green Fairy, and they get Kylie Minogue to play it. But on the stage, they have it that it's Satine because Christian's seen the Green Fairy after drinking the absinthe.
That makes sense.
So that's cool. You know, like, I like the way that works out.
I can almost see that because there was a split second when I was watching the movie where I thought the Green Fairy was Nicole Kidman for a second. It's like, no, I think that's somebody else. Oh, that's Kylie Minogue. Okay.
And then for the second thing, and this is going to be something big that actually we were watching the movie and Kristen was telling me this one specific thing that they elaborate on the stage play that actually makes a lot of sense for the film. So John Wick was Zombo's character. Do you notice how, like, after the initial opening of the movie, he's always drunk and always like crying?
Yeah.
So on the stage play, they make it and they do a lot of background on the stage play. So Satine and his character meet as kids, as newly homeless orphans.
Oh.
So that's how they know each other. That's how John Wick was Amo's character and Satine know each other. They know each other from kids. He helped her learn how to survive on the streets before she got the job at the Moulin Rouge and before he got a job there too. He fell in love with her, but never told her. And he feels that he lost his chance with Satine. So when he saw that Christian was falling in love with Satine, he figured the best thing he could do was help Christian not make the same mistake he did.
Oh, wow. I really like that.
So when you go back and watch Moulin Rouge, the movie, there's a lot of scenes where, like, Christian and Satine are together for really the first time and they have their first, you know, like, alone time. He's crying, looking at the elephant. And there are scenes where, like, John Wick was almost character is, like, torn. Like, if you look at the scenes that he's watching, when they show him being drunk and upset, it has to do with Satine and Christian, or Satine having to, like, backstab Christian to save him. Like, it, like, that fits in the film. It's just never
very cool.
Part of me wonders if they cut that out of the film because Nicole Kidman was married to Tom Cruise at the time.
I wonder.
And Tom Cruise is a short man. So
now the character on the Broadway play is of normal height.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
they
so
did
John
not keep that.
So John Leguizamo could play him on Broadway today. Honestly, I looked at it as this was a prequel to Super Mario Brothers, and then in the actual Super Mario Brothers movie, he just ate a mushroom.
Well,
something else I found, the book Moulin Rouge, or the one that you mentioned, Devin, they showed a picture of the artist the character that Christian's based on. That character in the book is based on an actual artist from France. And I saw the picture of him on Wiki, if it's correct. And he looks like John Wick was Zombo's character from in the movie.
Oh, well, that's cool that they based him so closely.
Yeah. So I mean, there's that. But then there's this other thing that I want to talk about. And it has to do with Roxanne. The Roxanne musical number on the stage play is just Christian.
Oh.
There's no dance number. The Argentinian is not singing, which to Kristen's disappointment, because she likes the more raspy voice for the song.
Me too.
But the guy who plays Christian, and it was his last weekend doing the performance when she went to go, like, see it. He did an amazing job. There's no negative there. It was just, when it comes to the movie, she likes the movie version better than she liked the stage play. But the stage play is, you know, it's a better experience.
So for musical theater nerds, Christian in Moulin Rouge is Aaron Tveit, who is a Broadway gem. I love everything he does. I've seen him in Next to Normal. I've seen him in, my goodness, I've seen him in something else, but he is an absolute gem. But he's also done some TV. So he's, you know, he's acted in a few things.
And they put Moulin, the director, producers behind Moulin Rouge on stage specifically wanted him for the role of Christian. And it was written for him.
That's very cool. Yeah. I can see it. He's one of my Broadway heroes.
Like, it's when you listen to Ewan McGregor and you listen to his voice and then you listen to his, like, he's definitely the better singer.
Yeah.
But they have very similar voices when it comes to singing voices.
They're both these, like, beautiful, clear tenors.
I'll stick with tenor.
I'll call them beautiful and clear. I don't care. How was it weird for you guys to see Ewan McGregor sing? Was that weird?
No.
No?
I mean, he sings to me every night in my dreams. So, no.
This was, honestly, this was, even though I had seen, obviously, I'd seen the prequels, I had seen The Phantom Menace. I had not seen the movie that Ewan McGregor got his start from, got his, like, mainstream start from. I forget what the name of it now.
Is it Big Fish?
Train Spotting.
I had not seen Train Spotting yet. I had seen The Phantom Menace. But this was the movie that I was like, oh, so that's Ewan McGregor. That's Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's the guy that my friends talk about from Train Spotting. Like, this was the movie that made me recognize Ewan McGregor.
Got it.
So to me, like, honestly, when he's not singing, I feel weird.
It wasn't weird for me because I had seen Beauty and the Beast and he's Gaston in that.
Is he?
Yeah. He sings Be Our Guest.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, not Gaston. Lumiere. Lumiere. Yeah, that's it. I don't know Beauty and the Beast.
I forgot that was him.
Live action?
Yeah. He's Lumiere.
That's right. He was. I'm sorry.
Just looking at Ewan McGregor's IMDb, I'm surprised that Obi-Wan Kenobi is not in his known for.
Really?
It's Moulin Rouge, Train Spotting 2, and August Osage County.
I've never heard of that, ever.
It's a film adaptation of a play that listen to this cast. Meryl Streep, Dermot Mulroney, Julia Roberts, Juliette Lewis, Chris Cooper, Ewan McGregor, Margot Martindale, Sam Shepard, Abigail Benson, Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah, there's a lot of people in that.
This is amazing. I need to watch this movie now.
And then I need to counteract Devin's reaction to that, to me just going, eh.
I'm sorry, but...
This is one of the things I like about you, Devin, because we can play off each other.
Exactly.
This happens every time. Alan reads off a really heavy A-list cast, and you're all excited and pumped up, and I'm just like, great, so there's no money for creativity. That's awesome.
Look, I would watch 2 hours of those individuals standing in a room, sipping the whiskey they brought with them, saying a word. Just uncomfortable every couple minutes, and I'll be happy.
With the trailer that's playing right now in the background, I wouldn't be surprised if that's most of the movie.
I hope it is.
All right. Final thoughts on Moulin Rouge.
I like this movie. I won't always seek this movie out, but in the one time every year and a half, couple months it pops up, I'm happy to see it.
I feel like, I mean, this movie's great. I love it. But if there's one thing I had to critique it, and it's something that they critiqued in the stage play, apparently. I don't really like how weaselly the Duke is. Like, I feel like it's a bit too weaselly. But then at the same time, it's a really the movie's really surreal. So his character has to be that weaselly because everything's over the top. But, like, in the stage play, he's just more of, like, a he has, his personality is more overbearing than it is weaselly.
Okay.
That makes more sense though.
So
I will probably listen to the soundtrack to this more than I will ever watch it again in my life. Okay. Because I'm good for a while. I'll probably watch clips here and there, but I enjoyed this. I'd go check it out on Broadway. Devin, let me know when you're coming into town again. Maybe we can work something out.
Oh, that would be amazing. I'm on board.
But yeah.
One thing I recommend, Alan, if you like it that much, I highly recommend listening to the Broadway soundtrack.
Because the music's
different too.
I've been meaning to give it a listen.
I
might give it a shot, but we'll see. I think that does it for our. Oh wait, I have something Baz Luhrmann related that came up today that I forgot to talk about.
What is it?
So just before the show, I saw a news story that had Baz Luhrmann's name in it, and it has to do with another one of his films we haven't talked about tonight because I've never seen it. It has to do with his film Australia. That came out in 2008 with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman. Baz Luhrmann is heading back to Australia, an expanded and reimagined version of the 2008 film, which starred Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman, will debut on Hulu in the U.S. this winter. The 6-part limited series titled Far Away Downs will feature footage from the movie, as well as an expanded serialized version of the story with a new ending and updated soundtrack.
What?
So this is a quote from Baz Luhrmann. I originally set out to take the notion of the sweeping Gone with the Wind style epic and turn it on its head. A way of using romance and epic drama to shine a light on the roles of the First Nations people and painful scar in Australian history from the stolen generations. While Australia, the film has its own life, there was another telling of this story, one with different layers, nuances, and even alternative plot twists, and an episodic format has allowed us to explore that. Drawn from the same material as Far Away Downs is a new variation on Australia for audiences to discover. So pretty much he's taking his film, expanding it, and making it more Baz Luhrmann-y.
Wow. Did anybody like Australia? Anyone?
I think Hugh Jackman didn't like it so much that he moved away from Australia. No, I think it just met like mediocre reviews. It wasn't anything special. Let me look here and see what I can find.
Because I think I remember this movie being pitched to me, and maybe this was my dad doing it. But somebody went, this movie is going to be the next Indiana Jones. And I went, nothing is the next Indiana Jones. I never want to see it. And for that reason, I have never seen this movie and hold the weirdest like little kid grudge against it that I've ever had.
It has a 6.6 on IMDb. Its plot here is set in North Australia before World War II. An English woman who inherits a sprawling ranch reluctantly packs with a stockman in order to drive 2,000 head of cattle over unforgiving landscapes. It sounds like something you would see at Epcot.
Yeah, but it does though. It sounds like almost nothing. Like,
I don't know. Like, I'm curious how much of a Baz Luhrmann spin this has. If he's going back and adding like different sequences and different things to it, it feels like he's just putting more of his spice on it.
The movie's already 2 hours and 45 minutes. Like that's 3 episodes of like a mini series anyway. So is he only adding another 3 hours
or something like that? Yeah.
Wow.
Or one episode of Stranger Things.
The only Australian thing I've ever really cared about is the movie Reckless Kelly that came out in 1993.
Don't know that one.
Okay. Do I need to make you watch Kangaroo Jack?
I have seen Kangaroo Jack, and I'm telling you right now, I saw Reckless Kelly when I was like 10, and It's basically an Australian comedy about the Australian version of like their like Robin Hood, but set in like the early 90s in Australia, and he comes to America.
Got it. Okay.
Neat.
So I think that does it for our Moulin Rouge topic. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got some exciting things planned for the rest of this week. This weekend, but time to be announced later, Devin and I will be doing another watch party. We'll be watching, just in time for the American Independence Day, we're going to be watching a little film called Independence Day. So if you wanted to join us, you can do that on our Scener, which is in the Twitch chat right now. That's not right. I forgot we already had a keystroke that was watch. Anyway, go to our Facebook page and you'll be able to find the link to our Scener page where you will see, you'll be able to join Devin and I to watch Independence Day. All you need to join us is an HBO Max subscription. If you don't have that, we will probably be releasing this one as a audio commentary. So you can watch Independence Day along with us on Independence Day if you would like. Now, next week is my pick. And Independence Day is July 4th. Our next show is July 5th. So I think it is only fitting that on the sequel to July 4th, we watch the sequel to Independence Day, which is Independence Day Resurgence.
I can't wait to hear your thoughts on this movie, Alan.
I have not seen it since opening night, and I am that was 6 years ago. So,
and I clearly remember your reaction, initial reaction to it.
I might have to go back and pull the clips. I think we talked about it on the show that week. But yeah, so we'll be talking about Independence Day Resurgence next week. So tune in for that. We will be live on Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube. You can also find You Have to Watch This podcast the next day on your wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit our website, rumrunnerspodcastnetwork.com/ You Have to Watch This pod. Until next time, it's nice having both of you here. This has been great. We're going to do a few weeks of the three of us all together, hopefully. And then I go on vacation. So, but until next time, for You Have to Watch This podcast, I'm Alan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Devin.
And I don't know. Devin, just end it with some Lady Marmalade.
No, I don't want to. Okay. I'm now nervous for it.
Okay.
God. Would she spectacular? Oh, wait, Ryan, what's their thing? The truth, love, and beauty or something?
Was it truth, freedom, love, and beauty?
That's it. That's what we're ending on. Truth, freedom, love, and beauty.
See you next week.